Hello, and welcome to the Adult Gamer Community Podcast. I'm Mellified, and I'm joined in hosting duties today by the esteemed Fenrir765 and our best last hope for the future of mankind, it's Hoptimus. Our community guest host tonight joins us from a land down under where everything is trying to kill him daily. It's Professor Pluto. He's actually also our first guest who's got his own podcast, so we're all going to look really terrible by comparison, I expect. Does that sound about right, Fenrir?
I think that sounds exactly correct. But the good news is we are on episode 10, Mel. We have made
Dear
it this
God,
far.
How did that happen?
I don't know, but the council hasn't fired us yet. So,
well, I did collect those particular pictures of a certain council member, so I think that might have something to do with it.
I don't know. Hoptimus might be able to give us more insight into the council's thinking.
Well, once you're on the council, it's kind of like Vegas. I can't really speak for any of that. It's you'll understand one day when you serve.
Damn, I'm always trying to figure out the inner workings of this place.
Oh, dear. So, Professor Pluto, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, sir?
Yeah, well, like you said, I do appear on a podcast with two of my friends called the Real Gamerscore Podcast. It's mainly an achievement-focused podcast where, you know, obviously we talk about the achievements that we earn and what it looks like, but we also run through the news and what we've been playing. It's quite similar, actually, to what you guys do, but with primarily Xbox and achievement-focused. When I play video games, I play for the achievements. I guess you could say I'm an achievement hunter. I'm last check one of my 352,000 gamer score, so I've been chasing them for a while. But I play.
Now, does that go back to the beginnings of the 360? Like, when did you start?
Well, I actually, when I first started playing Xbox on my 360, I had no idea what achievements were. I just really wanted to play. I think it was Perfect Dark, and these things were popping up, and I was like, "What is this? I don't even know what these are." And it wasn't probably until 2009 where I started really going for them, and I think I joined TrueAchievements.com in 2012. And if you haven't joined True Achievements, for those who don't know, it's a website where there's a lot of help online where you can get like solutions on how to get achievements if you're really stuck. There's lots of information, and you can join sessions where you can get together and play, you know, for whichever achievement you want. But probably
didn't True Achievements, I mean, do they still do this where they kind of the ratio that achievements can have higher ratios or lower ratios based on ease or difficulty? So your True Achievement score could be different than what your actual Xbox gamer score is.
Yeah, and it'll always be different, pretty much. The ratio is, how do you explain the ratio? Yeah, it's different to gamer score. It converts your gamer score into true achievement points. So if you have an achievement that's worth 100 gamer score, and it's really easy, it'll be worth close to 100 true achievement points. But if you have one that's worth 100 gamer score, and it's very, very difficult, that ratio can get into the tens and twenties and, you know, sometimes even higher than that. So I don't pay a whole lot of attention to my true achievement score. I mean, it's there and I look at it, but I'm all about the gamer score. So yeah, it does extend all the way back, but yeah, I've probably been 7, 8, 9 years maybe seriously chasing the achievements. And I mean, I've played some crap, but I've also, you know, when you pick up a game and you go, oh, this might be easy for the achievements, and then you end up finding out, you know, like a hidden gem. So I guess it kind of swings both ways.
Yeah, I remember back in the early days of the 360 when it was like who was going to hit 100K first. Yeah. And one of the guys was Strip Club DJ, I remember. It was his gamer tag.
What a name.
Apparently, supposedly, he really was a Strip Club DJ, which I thought was interesting.
Lots of good scenery.
Yeah. All right. Well, anything else before we move on, Professor? Anything you want the folks at home to know?
Well, I guess probably the nerdiest thing about me is I have a whiteboard of video games. That it started one day when I was couldn't figure out what to play, so I wrote down on the whiteboard all the games that I had and wanted to play. I got one achievement in them, so they appeared on my gamer tag, and now they sit on my whiteboard, and you know, I could just look at them all in one place because I don't have them all downloaded or installed, or you know, they're all in different places. But so I'll talk about my whiteboard probably from time to time, saying it's on the whiteboard, or you know, so I sound like a real dork, but there's a system and it works for me.
So it's like a whiteboard of games that you've scored achievements in, or games that you plan to finish?
Well, I have two sides of the whiteboard. The left-hand side is the ones that I have achievements in. So there's three left on that side. And then on the right-hand side, which I'm going to rewrite when I finish the left side, is all the games that I have and want to play that I have not started. And there's about 50 games, 40 games on that side. I can't see it all from where I'm sitting, but yeah, there's a lot. I'm looking forward to starting on there. There's some good games on that side, man.
Hey, organization's the key to a higher gamer score, I guess.
Well, I guess it's sometimes like when you look in your wardrobe, and I guess maybe this stereotypically applies more to women. It's like, oh, I've got nothing to wear, when it's a wardrobe full of stuff. I look at my games collection and go, oh, I've got so many things to play. I don't know what to play. And you can like get paralyzed by it at times. And in my circle of Xbox friends, having 50 games, like I'm down the really low end. Like, so, you know, seeing 50 games at a glance really helps me out. But yeah, I guess some people couldn't fit everything on their whiteboard if they wrote them all up.
Melified, how many whiteboards would you need?
Well, my library is about 1,200 digital games on Xbox right now, 360 and Xbox One. So a lot. It depends how small they wrote, I suppose. Unlike Professor, I actually have them all downloaded, though.
That's nuts, man.
That's why it takes them forever to load a game.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have two external desktop hard drives. I think one's 8 and one's 10 terabyte. And then I have a 2 terabyte SSD on there for the stuff I want to play more competitively.
Yeah, man, that's a lot. Like, you remind me of my friends, well, two of my friends, Chin Doctor and Tarragon. Tarragon's got the most games out of anyone I've ever heard of. I've been to his house. And he's got one of those, you know, normal size bookshelves, but he's got them in sleeves because he can't fit them all there in the cases. And that obviously doesn't include the digital games that he's got. But man, there's a lot of people that have got a lot of games out there. I reckon people like you and my friends are the whales of Xbox Live. You know,
probably
talk about them in the free-to-play games.
Yeah. I had at one point every Xbox 360 game, and I sort of gave up eventually as the releases sprawled, as the system became more popular. But out the first couple of years, I kind of kept up with all the non-sports games on the platform.
That'd be impossible.
So I have all those
today
in my garage. Yeah.
And there's some real rare ones around as well. Like if you get the Japanese variants and Korean variants of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a conversation sometime about how badly Microsoft missed launching the 360 in Japan instead of Korea, because they could have owned the Korean market if they had done that. But that's another topic for another day.
Mm-hmm.
Before we ramble on anymore, Fenn, you want to take us to our first news item this time out?
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for this one. Earlier we got a release for a release date and a trailer for Star Wars Fallen Jedi, the Respawn game, and that trailer looked pretty badass. I was pretty excited for it. Kind of gave me a bit of the vibe from that trailer we got from Star Wars 1313. I don't know how many years ago that was at E3, but it definitely, you know, just kind of invoke that whole thing. Takes place between what looks like to be episode 3 and episode 4. A lot of different things that were shown in the trailer connect back to like the Rebels and Clone Wars show. So it'd be really interesting to see what happens. Respawn has come out and said that there's going to be no multiplayer or microtransactions for the game. You can pre-order a digital deluxe version, and I think it's on sale for like $63. But it seems like you only get skins with the version. But the game drops on November 15th, 2019. So EA finally comes out with another Star Wars game that is not Battlefront. I hope it does well. That's all I can say.
I think in terms of the game, I'm personally not a big fan of Star Wars. But the interesting thing that I found this game is like this already saying there's no microtransactions, no loot boxes. It seems like a way of marketing the game, which, you know, 10, 20 years ago,
they
you'd never see that.
Right, it's only because they got like lambasted to shit for Battlefront 2. Like, so there was so much bad press. We actually talked about that on episode 2, 3. I don't remember. It's
been
And it kind of leads into the second thing that I think all things seem to be on track for this game to be a hit. And I think you mentioned Star Wars 1313. I know there are a lot of people around that were very salty about that when that was canned. But if this is a good release and it's, you know, popular and good, it'll go a long way to kind of rebuilding the faith that the Star Wars fans will have in EA to make decent Star Wars games.
Well, it's EA's last ditch effort, I think, to say, hey, we can make a good Star Wars game that's not Battlefront. So this is its final chance. I mean, and Respawn has a good track record. Titanfall 2. Yeah. I mean, those are both fantastic games and they've done a really great job. So, and I mean, we've talked about before, Titanfall 2 had probably one of the best single player story, first person shooter storylines in this generation on the show. So, it's definitely, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's too far away. There's still details being released, and I'm now going to go completely dark on this game until it drops. So I can try to, you know, not have my expectations get too high and be suckered into a product that is not as great as my mind makes it out to be.
I think it's pretty fair to have a faith in Respawn because, like you said, they have got that track record that's just hit after hit. I mean, I played Titanfall 1 to completion, including those stupid zero gamer score achievements for hitting Generation 10. But, you know, I had a lot of fun with the game while I did play it. And like you said, Titanfall 2 has a great campaign. So, and Apex Legends came from them as well, which from everything I've pretty much read about it, it's very positive on that. So I think, you know, you're probably right to have faith in Respawn to deliver a good experience for Star Wars fans.
I think one thing that I think is worth noting is this apparently was done in cooperation with the team at Disney who are responsible for the story of Star Wars. This is going to be considered canon Star Wars lore, which is interesting.
Right, so is Battlefront 2. All of the current Star Wars properties are all have to be canon. Like, that's just how they're doing things now. So,
fair enough. I think the thing about it that makes me nervous is...
here we go.
We'll see how the story comes out, right? I don't think Disney's strong point in the Star Wars universe has been the storytelling.
I mean,
in the last few movies.
It's not in Melified Star Wars canon. It's in the overall current Star Wars canon, but Melified Star Wars canon is 3 movies.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying, I don't think Disney has been a great steward of the story, and quite frankly, neither was George Lucas with the first 3 movies, or, well, the episodes 1 through 3, the prequels. I don't know if you guys, did you guys ever hear the story about why the Darth Vader's apprentice in Star Wars Force Unleashed was referred to as Starkiller in the game?
Well, Luke's original name was Starkiller.
Right, but...
Or Anakin's, actually, original name was Anakin Starkiller in the original story before it got rewritten like 10 times.
Yes, but the character when they went to Lucas and said, hey, we have this character, he's, you know, Darth Vader's secret apprentice, we want to call him Darth something, what can we call him? Lucas gave them a list of names which were horrible, like Darth Goofy. That wasn't one of them, but it was like on that level of just completely awful. And that's why they went with Starkiller, because they hated all the names that Lucas was going to let them use. Yeah. So I just, that kind of thing scares me a little bit. With somebody outside the development team having that much creative control.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Respawn, this was the most interesting story I saw in the past, it was about 4 days ago, this popped across Twitter. Jason West, who is the co-founder of Infinity Ward and helped develop who helped develop Titanfall, but he developed Medal of Honor, Allied Assault at EA, and then he went over to Activision and started Infinity Ward. They developed Call of Duty, then he left Activision and started Respawn. You know, Respawn got bought out by EA. He left Respawn, and now he's getting hired by Epic Games. So I don't know what Epic is up to, if they're looking to build a new game, if they want him to just tweak Fortnite because maybe Apex scared them a little bit. I don't know. I mean, if they bring a guy like this, I think they're probably developing something new. But still, that's a pretty big career move for that guy.
Well, hasn't he been like on the bench for a while, like 2012, 2013 or something?
Well, he was more overseeing stuff. He wasn't like actually game designing and directing, but he was still at the studio. I mean, he was one of the lead guys for Titanfall 1. And I think he kind of took a back seat to let the other guys run the show for Titanfall 2, but still, I'm just saying, that could be big.
No, yeah. I mean, Epic is known to bring in, you know, big names or up-and-coming names that have done some good things and use them effectively. I mean, Cliffy B, bringing him in and launching Gears of War. So there could be a chance for something, a match made in heaven, something great dropping.
Love to see a new Unreal Tournament game. I mean, I don't think that's why he's been brought across, but
it could be.
Awesome. I mean, I didn't even think about that.
The UT Battle Royale could come along, and who knows?
Well, it's kind of got that almost like the precursor to Battle Royales,
right?
Like those
arena
shooters. It's larger arena,
right? That was a fun game. I played the shit out of that game.
It was the first game I ever played online. Unreal Tournament on PC back in the days. When I had a dial-up connection.
Yeah.
Man, those were the days. Such a good game.
Well, we don't have to worry about dial-up. Melified, what? You have some crazy news here.
Yeah, well, so Sony apparently decided that they didn't want to wait and be lost in the E3 news cycle. They gave an exclusive story to Wired with some specs on the new PlayStation 5, although that name has not been confirmed. What they did confirm was the system will have a disk drive. It will be backwards compatible with the PS4 and PSVR.
I'm going to call right now. It's still x86 tech. That's why it's going to be backwards compatible.
Yes, it is. It's an AMD chip, AMD GPU as well. It's going to have an SSD drive, which they were bragging about how much faster games were loading off of SSD. I suspect that means
stuff
we'll be
that
back.
Gamers have known for like 10 years. Where you been, man?
Yeah, seriously. Well, I suspect this means we're going to be back in the sub terabyte range as the standard, you know, size for your system. We may see 256. You know, gig being the entry point, which is a little bit ugly.
Chintzy.
Yeah.
Here, you can install three games. Have fun with that, especially if that next detail in your story is true.
Well, and so the system is capable of 8K and 3D audio. And
more likely
what this
real time 4K.
Well, and specifically, I think what they're talking about here is HDMI 2.2 compatibility, so it can output 8K, which might be useful for streaming, you know, stuff in the future. But that doesn't necessarily mean the games will be 8K. I was telling Fenn earlier, I mean, I could make you a game that does 8K 60 frames today. It's just going to look like an Atari 2600 game, right? Like, resolution is not the only
factor. Dude, I will play Yar's Revenge in 8K. Bring it.
That is my favorite Atari 2600 game. Dude, that game rules. So I'm all over that. Yeah. I'm all over it. But I just mentioned that to illustrate that, you know, the number of pixels on the screen are not the only thing that matter. And then finally, the last bit of news was they are confirming ray tracing technology, which improves basically the visual quality. You get things like real-time reflections off water.
It's pretty sick. They have it on the PC version of Battlefield 5 if you have a high enough video card. And it's definitely really pretty. It adds a lot. You wouldn't think so. It starts out subtle, but when you see it in motion, you're like, holy crap, that looks amazing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it remains to be seen how well the game engines will be able to take advantage of some of these features and at what frame rates, of course. But this certainly, you know, gives us an idea of what we can expect from the next gen. They did also confirm it will not be released this year. So we're looking at least 2020 before we'll see this. So, on a related note, Professor Pluto, we heard from Microsoft today as well.
Yes, one of the last companies standing for E3. Well, I guess it's not that bad yet, but it's kind of heading that way. But they've started talking about their E3 plans for this year. So they've said the E3 2019 briefing will begin at 1 p.m. PT. I don't even know what time zone that is. Is that Pacific time?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And 4 p.m. ET Eastern time, I think that is.
Look at June you. You're 9th. Almost American.
I know. I have to know some things about these time zones because I have to podcast with an American and play video games with them all the time. So, yeah. So, June 9th, 4 p.m. ET and 1 p.m. PT. So, they're going to be showcasing trailers for unannounced titles that will arrive later this year, as well as in-depth looks at games that we do already know about, and they're going to be running a mixpot again. Then they've got their Inside Xbox episode, which is at 3 p.m. PDT on June the 10th. Exclusive announcements, game demos, interviews, and more, etc., etc. So, I actually really look forward to Microsoft press conferences at E3. I will get up any time of day to watch it, provided it's not a work day. And, I mean, they just knock it out of the park when they get on there. What do you guys think?
I'm super excited.
Yeah, I may be biased. I had all the consoles for a while, but the last couple generations I've stayed with Xbox because I don't have enough time and or money to play everything, so I've kind of stayed with Xbox. I always get excited when they show their new stuff, and it's always like, oh, cool. And honestly, the one thing, this is going to segue back to last episode, I just want to see more Borderlands 3.
Can't get too far from that, can we, Hop?
I think for me, it really comes down to, I mean, I could have a gaming PC. I could play on a gaming PC. I choose Xbox in part because I want an easy mode, right?
Yeah,
I just want to sit down in front of my TV and play.
Yeah.
And Microsoft's done a really good job with the X of reclaiming the, you know, console performance crown. And I'm really excited to see what they're going to do with their next gen. The visuals, as we love to joke about, Hop. 4K HDR, man, hard to beat. It is so
well, and
so
this pretty. Time it should be like right now we're getting 4K HDR, sometimes 4 or sometimes actual 4K if you watch the Digital Foundry videos, but most of the time it's not. It's underperforming. It's usually 2K plus. It's shy of 4K a lot of times, but with good frame rates. These new machines, we should be getting 60 frames 4K minimum, probably standard, and then the occasional, you know, maybe art style theme game where they go really nuts with some sort of 8K mode. Not that I'm going to buy an 8K TV anytime soon, but real time 4K 60 would be pretty nice. I mean, playing the re-release of Borderlands 1 and then now the Handsome Collection in 4K 60 is really nice. So,
well, and don't forget, you know, Microsoft did a lot of work with Samsung to get variable refresh rate,
right,
and 120 hertz refresh rate as part of the HDMI standard. So, you know, you can buy an Xbox today with a Samsung TV that will let you do up to 120 hertz and do it variable, so it doesn't ever tear on the frames, which is pretty impressive. And I think that has the potential to become more mainstream with this new console.
Yeah, well, I know when I got my X and I got my 4K TV, I remember thinking, oh, you know, whatever, it's just 4K, it'll be like a slightly better 1080p. But when you actually get into a game that's pumping out a decent 4K picture, mm-hmm. it's, man, it is so...
I was just like you, and then I got a 4K TV, and I was like, whoa, my brain is just melted.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think I noticed that first, probably Gears of War 4, I think.
Oh, yeah, that and Forza Horizon 4. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, just like when you're running, you know, you hold down A to roadie run, and, like, the frames are just there. It doesn't look like it's clipping all over the place. You're moving, and it's just so... There's just so much detail. It's, man, it's crazy, but it's awesome. Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Hot Man. 4K 60, give it to me.
Right.
I'm happy with that.
Well, and I'll just add to that I think HDR is a huge factor in.
Yeah, that to me that was even bigger than the 4K, but it sure helps.
I wouldn't know about any of this. I'm just over here with my 1080p TV and.
I thought you were playing on a 19-inch RCA console, the wooden one with the two round knobs.
Yeah, that's what's happening. That's what's going
harsh,
on.
Harsh, harsh. Well, before we have to break up a fist fight between Fenn and Hop, I wanted to talk about some game updates. Professor, did you want to talk about Cuphead on the Switch?
Yeah, definitely. So Cuphead has been is being released, about tomorrow, 18th of April, which everyone would probably know it's primarily a Microsoft game. It won't be the first game to get achievements on the Switch if it does. I don't think that's been confirmed yet. But what the way I see it going is that Microsoft actually asked the studio to port this across to the Switch. And, you know, I guess they happily said, yeah, pay me a bag load of cash and I'll do it. So it's coming. But they've confirmed that there's Xbox Live. They say Xbox Live enabled, which kind of is ambiguous as to whether achievements will be available in the game or not. But if they are, I think it's a good thing, because Microsoft and Nintendo partnering up, I think, would be, you know, really, really awesome. You know, there's those rumors, I think it was last month, that the Switch might be getting access to the Game Pass games with some sort of subscription. I don't know where that's gone in terms of being confirmed or not, but I personally, I would buy a Switch if I could play Xbox games on it.
I'm of the opinion that if the biggest barrier to me buying a game on multiple platforms is I don't have time to play it once most of the time, so the idea of playing it twice and having different save files is not appealing. Yeah. If I could have a game like this that my progress was synced with Xbox Live and I could move between the console, you know, the Xbox and the Switch seamlessly and have my saves just sync up, that's pretty compelling. Like, all of a sudden I'm buying every game twice.
Yeah, and I think that's the way of the future. If I had to put a bet onto it, you know, because like you said, it doesn't make sense. You know, you want to play the first five levels of a game and then you have to go out, you know, wait at the doctor's for an hour, but after the appointment time they tell you, well, you know, you bring your Switch with you and you got to play those first five levels again. Like, no, I think that the more it happens, like we've obviously already seen it with games like Fortnite, where the cross-play and the cross-progression, well, unless you're Sony, I think, but the crossplay and the cross progression of your saves are there. Rocket League has cross play, but I don't think cross progression yet. Paladins, you know, there's a lot that are coming this way, and I think in a few years' time it'll be reasonably commonplace. And I think that even though PlayStation has the crown now, it's, I don't know how relevant it's going to be, because at the end of the day, you just want to play games with your friends, no matter what system they're on. And with the new, I guess I'm rambling a bit, but with the new generation just around the corner, if you're looking at same price, same power, and you go, oh, Xbox lets me play with my friends on PC and Switch, it's a differentiating factor. And I think people will buy units because of it.
I agree, and I think, you know, we'll see what happens. Anything to add, guys? Are we good?
Yeah, I mean, Cuphead's a fantastic game. Hard as hell, but good play.
I just think it's cool that they're doing that, and I really think that leads more to them talking about doing that Game Pass on Switch. It seems like they're laying the groundwork to set that all up, and it's a win-win for both companies and for gamers, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of win for gamers, so I just got to say, you know, we are always playing with the format of the show, and we try to adjust it. We feel like, you know, when we have conversation is the best part of the show. But there's something I always like to highlight, and I wanted to keep this in the show, is to call out, like, game companies that are giving away free content or drastically improving their games. They don't make any extra money. In fact, it costs them money to release those game patches. And so I always look at that as a big plus when a game company puts in a bunch of effort to give us a big update. And on that front, God bless Ubisoft. They have had a game that, you know, didn't really do well. They kept plugging away at it, and they've done that more than once. It certainly was true for Honor. And more recently, the game Starlink, Battle for Atlas, came out. It was a Toys to Life game, didn't sell real well. I just, in fact, saw Newegg was selling the starter pack, which was, I think, $80 at launch, is now selling for $10. They've announced they're not doing any more toys, no more physical goods, which is a shame because it's actually a really fun game. If you like the Ubisoft open world, you know, collect-a-thon, explore all the nooks and crannies kind of gameplay, Starlink's a great E10 rated version of that experience. And on top of that, the Switch version has an awesome Star Fox crossover. So you actually can play as Star Fox in the game. And they've done a couple free updates with some new content. They've got another free update coming out with a ton of new content, including on the Switch, exclusive Star Fox missions. So if you haven't picked this game up, that's pretty compelling reason, especially if you can find the starter pack dirt cheap. You can get a digital version of the game that has all of the toys as digital versions, and you then get those instead of having to buy all the toys. But I just thought this was so cool that they're still doing this and giving away so much free content for a game that, by most measures, was not a very big success.
So. I saw the toys on clearance when I was at the shop the other day. I think they were less than $5 a toy, which, you know,
yeah, which Australian they're dollars nice is toys. Like
$2 US, I guess. But
yeah,
it's cheap, man, to get those toys.
They're actually pretty nice. I mean, I ended up getting a full set of them, and they're pretty fun. They do a good job. So I'm sad that the Toys to Life part didn't go anywhere, but the game, you know, they're still out there with it. So
that is cool about the Star Fox crossover, though. That that game, the Star Fox Nintendo 64 game, and man, I've got so many memories there. That game was awesome. Although, was it Dippy or Zippy or whatever his name is? Do a barrel roll. Like, apart from that, but everything else about it was really fun at the time, man.
So we also have some news about Fenn and Hop going to prison, is what I read this headline as. Do I have that right, guys?
Dude, you know, if I could do my best.
We went to prison and we got rolled. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. We definitely were not Sean Connery in The Rock, that's for sure. But, I mean, yeah, Call of Duty Blackout dropped a new map called Alcatraz, and it's a close quarters map, much smaller than the main map on the game.
Yeah, where, like a tenth the size. Easily.
Yeah. And it's got 40 players, all quads right now. Supposedly the duos mode is supposed to drop sometime soon. But it's a lot of fun. It's very fast paced. It's, you know, you come out of this weird vagina tunnel and you come flying towards the map and you try to get your shit and kill people as quickly as you can. There's respawns.
Why is it a vagina tunnel? This is a family friendly show, but like,
I don't know how else to describe it. I feel like you're being birthed out into a map full of death. So that's just my opinion. Hop, I don't know. Maybe you can describe it better than I can.
Well, it's more like you're going into like crazy nightmare storm. He's just making a joke about how it kind of looks. I thought it looked more like that black hole that they finally were able to take a picture of. I think it's supposed to be like a bad dream. And then it dumps you onto the map. It's really frantic and crazy. And if you don't get any good gear right away, it's tough to get ahead. Mm-hmm. Unless your teammates can keep you alive. It does have, what, 4 respawns in that mode, Finn?
I think it's 4 or 5, but eventually it gets to a point where you can't respawn at all, regardless of how many you have left. So
that one night you had left, and then I stayed on with Time and McSwitch and somebody else. I think we had a random where we had Time's friend Odie come in. We got second every game, like 6 games in a row. We were like, God damn it. It was a lot of fun, though. I dig it. It's cool. I'm glad they threw in another map. It's a neat change of pace. Hopefully a third map is in the future that maybe somewhere in between and a different setting.
Does it still have a circle that moves around the place?
Yeah, but the map is so small. It does. It's kind of tricky, too, because the map has a lot of verticality. So one of the games, I think we were in that game, Finn, where we couldn't make it to the circle because we were stuck on some tower and couldn't figure out how to get down, or I don't remember.
Yeah, it's a whole new game style play. I mean, there's no, like, let's go find a quiet corner to land. And
yeah, it's way too fast for that.
Get our stuff. I mean, you land and if you don't find a gun right off the bat, you're done. I mean, you got to move quick and know where you're going to. Map discipline is really important in that version of the game. So I know it's definitely a lot of fun. There's still that free trial going on right now with Call of Duty till the end of the month. So if you're interested in the chaos, frenetic pace of shooters, come try it out. It's a lot of fun. Hop and I will definitely play with you. If you just want to shoot us an invite, we'll jump in there. But now it's time to try something new. So I posted in the podcast Discord about us trying to get more engagement with our community and getting people involved on the show that don't necessarily want to come on as co-hosts. But they have questions. And this all started, you know, a few episodes back when, you know, things had gone badly with technology for me, but I won't mention the guy's name that, you know, ruined my technology devices that episode. But he posted a question, and I had the idea that open this up to anybody to post a question to ask us on the show. This could be go horribly wrong, or it could be a stroke of genius, but if things are the former, I will take the blame and do as Cersei does and take a walk of shame.
Ding, 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 ding. Shame.
I am... Each time we get the question, I'm the only one that knows the question, so I'll drop it live for all three hosts to kind of share their thoughts on it. This week's question comes from Hybrid Havoc, and he asked, if you could only play 5 games for the rest of your life, what are they, and why are they all Stardew Valley? I'm going to, for time's sake.
I think that might be biased.
Yeah, I think that was different because I thought I heard him say, why are they Borderlands?
I'm going to bring that down from 5 to about 2 games just for time's sake, and also make it a little harder for you guys to really, you know, pick 2 games you could play for the rest of your life. You know. Mm. So let's kind of maybe.
Wow.
I'll start with
3. I think okay. 3 would be better.
All right, we'll go with 3 then. I'll start with you, Professor Pluto. You can give us 1, and then we can go around and come back to you. But
well, I got the first one easily, Rocket League. It's one of the few games, I think there may be one other game that I continued to play after I finished all the achievements in the game. I love it. You know, little five-minute games, unless you hit overtime, where you can just keep getting better. We'll keep trying to get better anyway. And there's not many things, I guess this probably translates across the different games, not many things more satisfying is when someone's being toxic in the chat to you, they're beating you, and you come back and beat them, and you can just have a little swipe at them on the last screen. That's great. But yeah, Rocket League, definitely the first one for me.
All right, Hop, what's 1 for you?
I just said it, Borderlands.
Okay. Melvich?
Which Borderlands? Let's be specific.
Oh, dude, you're going to make... It's like picking a child. I'm going to have to go with 2. If I gotta go down to just 1, even though Brick is my favorite character, 2 is the better game with more constantly repeatable in-game content.
You could take the easy out and say the Handsome Collection.
Yeah, but that's really 2. And that doesn't have 1 on it. I mean, like I said, if I had to, 2 is definitely my favorite of the current 3 games. 4 if you count Tails out there. Tails is different, though. But out of the 3 loot shooter Borderlands, 2 is the best one, in my opinion.
I would agree.
I would think most people would. I mean, the other 2, the first game, of course, set the whole world up. It's really fun. And then the pre-sequel is really awesome, but the main fault with that game, as good of a story as it is, as good of characters as they have, as good of skill trees as they have, there's no end game. There's no farmable bosses or any of the fun that the second game had. Like, you guys may, you know, I don't think I was playing or didn't even know you guys during when Handsome Collection first came out. The first thing that Kicked and I did was get our characters up to 72 and then go right to Digistruct Peak and just start farming boss runs to get OP8 gear. And we did that for like 6 months straight every night for hours and hours and hours. So yeah, I love that game. What about you, Mel?
For me, my first pick would be Stellaris. The game has a bunch of interesting quests. There's all kinds of settings that you can adjust to set up the galaxy that you inhabit with these other alien races differently. You can customize your alien race that you want to play as and give them different abilities. And there's like completely different tech trees that you can get if you go one route, which is super spiritual, and you might develop psychic powers, whereas another civilization that's much more scientific based would develop, you know, super advanced technologies, AI or, you know, robot replacements for their bodies, things like that. And so I love the replayability of the game.
I would say my first choice would be, and I'm not the professor, by the way. Thanks, Mel.
Professor already dropped his.
Yeah.
Yeah, I keep trying to skip you and stuff.
Yeah,
you just left, so I don't know why.
All right.
It's like psychological, I guess.
Mine would be Mass Effect 2.
Oh, that's a good game.
I would play the hell out of that game all the time, and I would just keep going. So I don't need to go any further on that one. If you haven't played Mass Effect 2, then you need to go play the whole damn series right now. So, Professor, round 2.
I reckon Gears of War 4. So, I kind of in two minds about this because I'm really salty about all the achievements that the Coalition put into the game because they suck.
And they keep adding them.
No, they're done now, but yes, they did keep adding them.
They kept adding them for a while. I would turn it on and be like, hey, I got a bunch of achievements. All right.
Yeah. They didn't. The thing that annoyed me most about them was they added achievements and did not add anything to the game. It was like, I'll play the campaign again all the way through. on a harder difficulty. Oh, by the way, now do it with only two weapons. It's just dumb. But the game itself, if you separate it from the achievements, the Horde mode, Horde is probably one of my favorite game modes, and I think Gears of War does it better than just about anyone else. And 4, you'd probably pick 4 because it's the prettiest out of all of them, so, you know, that's good too.
Hop.
Oof, round 2. Oh, damn, this is very hard. I'm gonna go with Halo 5. For the multiplayer. The campaign was not that great, but the multiplayer I can still play and have a blast, and it has a lot of fun modes and a lot of cool maps, and you have Warzone and PvP, both small arena and big team battle, so I'm going to go Halo 5.
That was on my list, too. So, Mel, you're the last one in round 2.
I think that I would choose Divinity Original Sin 2. And the reason is that it's a really interesting tactical combat system. You stack elemental attacks to take down your enemies. You can get super powerful. It's got a really good story, a lot of interesting characters. You can't get the entire story for all the characters in one playthrough. You can also make your own custom characters, although they don't have quite as much backstory in the game at that point. But, I think that would keep me busy for quite a while.
All right, now round 3, our final one, last game you can play for the rest of your life, Pluto.
All right, now, probably people are going to judge me for this one, but until Rocket League, this was my favorite game, Dead Island.
Dude, zombies are fucking cool. What are you?
I enjoy Dead Island.
Nobody's judging.
But I really liked it.
When you say Dead Island, people get this idea in their head about that trailer. It's like, oh, the trailer lied to me. It's like, it's just a hype trailer. It got you interested in the game. It did what it was supposed to. Admittedly, the game was reasonably glitchy, but when it comes to glitchy stuff, I'm usually running pretty good. I don't tend to experience too many, but just running around the world, which was beautiful. I still remember walking up the walkway the first time. You turn around and you look out to the ocean. You look down the side of the mountain. I was picturing it in my head now. Man, that was beautiful. But running around and just katanaing zombies' heads off, arms off, it was just, I don't know, it was cathartic. But that, man, I love those games.
And you had such freedom in that game too. That helps.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you could also play as a melee character. You could play as a ranged character. You could craft your own weapons. I mean, there was a lot of elements to it. And they did fix a lot of the jank in later updates, as I recall.
Yeah. Well, it's getting to the point now where I've got all the achievements in Dead Island, Dead Island Riptide, both the remasters. A friend of mine has a Japanese Xbox, and there's a Japanese region equivalent of Dead Island, so I'm going to play it in Japanese as well. So
that is some dedication, sir.
Yeah, well, it's on True Achievements. They track series of games, and I want to get the Dead Island series completion. So,
All right.
Got to get the Japanese Xbox 360 off him for both of those games.
Yeah, very nice.
Hop, last game.
Oh, good Lord. This is tough, man. Super tough. Like, there's a bunch of 2D games I know I could probably play through over and over again because they're beautiful, but then I really love racing games and I don't have one of those to play yet. I guess I can race while I'm in Halo and a Warthog.
Yeah. There is that.
That's awesome. Yeah, which stage are we at now, bargaining?
Right? All right, if I got to go with the be-all, end-all of 2D action-adventure, Throwing down the gauntlet, Castlevania Symphony of the Night.
I was waiting for that from you.
Yeah. I thought it was going to be a Castlevania game.
You guys know me all too well. It was either that or Metroid, Super Metroid, and I was like, oh, God, it's like, I mean, you might as well tell me to cut off a toe.
So, Castlevania Symphony of the Night was originally on what, PlayStation 1?
The first release was PlayStation 1, then Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And then they re-released it later on 360 Arcade. It was actually the first 360 Arcade? Not the first. It was the first of a certain size. It was, or something like that. And then it's backwards compatible on Xbox One. And they've recently re-released. This pissed me off so bad. They recently re-released it on PS4 in a double pack with Castlevania Dracula X. But it's because it's a port of the Vita version. Hmm. You can't get that version on Xbox because Sony. I don't know. That makes me kind of grouchy because I had Castlevania Dracula X, not the, this isn't the Super Nintendo, it's the PC Engine / Turbo Duo version, and that's the one that's on the PS Vita and PS4. I had it on my Turbo Duo back in the day, and that's a really cool game. It's not as open or, it's not a Metroidvania like Symphony of the Night, it was more like Castlevania 3 and 4, but still a great game. But anyway, enough of that side tangent. Who's next?
Mel's last choice.
So, real quick, Pop, I would say that that was a 207% choice. Do I have that right?
right.
God, it's been a long time since I thought about that one. I was like, I was trying to go to Wikipedia or something and look that up to double check myself, but I winged it and I got it right, I'm happy to say. All right, so my last choice would be Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Was my game of the year last year. I love the game. They've kept adding updates. You can now go up to, I think, level 99. There's a new game plus mode. There's a ton of stuff to do. There's a ton of people to kill. You can kind of do the faction warfare back and forth, conquer the whole map for one side then the other if you really wanted to. That just infinite replayability for me.
And my last game will be Legend of Zelda: Link to the Past from the Super Nintendo. So,
you know how close I came to saying that? That's definitely probably in my, if we had a top 10, that would definitely be in there.
Yeah, so
I'm surprised by that one a little bit. I would have thought like Ocarina of Time.
Nah, see,
so okay, that's an episode for a whole other argument. I will argue to my death that Link to the Past is better than Ocarina of Time.
I've played A Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo, the SNES Mini, my phone. I've played it and on the computer through ROMs so many different ways. I still love that game, and it's just a classic. I can't wait to show my daughter how to play it when she gets older. And watch her just struggle to solve and beat any of the puzzles and just laugh at her. So
yeah, and it's not, this isn't anything bad on Ocarina of Time. It's not a bad game. It just, it doesn't hold up to how well crafted Link to the Past. And it has a lot to do with the N64. Just that machine was cool when it came out, but let's be honest, those graphics weren't all that mind-blowing, and they definitely do not hold up to the test of time. That whole 32-bit era of 3D actually looks really, really terrible today, whereas 2D games, 16-bit 2D games still look great to me.
Yeah.
But that, it could be because I have OLD. I don't know.
Well, you know, guys, thanks for participating in this little experiment. So hopefully we get some more... I get more DMs from the community on questions that you want to ask the host. It could be anything. I mean, I just want to have a fun segment that kind of gets a little off the rails and things can kind of get interesting. So feel free to ask any questions by sending me a direct message on Discord, and I will save up a pile of questions that I can ask on the show. So now it's time to talk about what we're playing, and Pluto, what have you been playing lately?
Well, actually, I was camping in the past week, so this list was shorter than it would otherwise be. But if you imagine being in a caravan park, I was there with my Xbox One X and my PC screen. But you know, as everyone who has an Xbox would know, they're mostly useless without the internet. So I took my shopping bag up to the Wi-Fi hub, set up my PC screen, my Xbox. I'm in the middle of, you know, the bush, and I'm playing Xbox. There's a few kids that walk past, like, oh, he's got his Xbox. How cool is that guy? I mean, I felt pretty cool, but I finished Deus Ex: Mankind Divided while I was up there. So
now, is that the second game of the newer trilogy or the first game?
That's the one that came out in 2016. So I think
So that's the second game.
Yeah, the game before that was Human Revolution in 2011. I think. Yeah,
and that was the Xbox 360.
Yes, the previous one.
Okay.
So, being that I go for the achievements, I was going for the achievements in Pacifist, not killing anyone during the play. I got that. I did not get Foxius of the Hounds for not setting off any alarms. So apparently that's pretty glitchy, but I, 2/3 of the way through the game, I did jump on a cop car and the car alarm went off, and I didn't think about it until a couple of hours later. I'm like, oh, that was an alarm. I don't know if it voided the no alarms achievement, but I mean, it's possible. I'm not going to go through and play it again, and I don't have a save from before that that's not in the first chapter of the game, so I'd have to play the whole thing again.
Oof.
But anyway, I've got the two story DLCs and the breach mode to go on to, so I'll go and do that. I've been playing Rocket League, so I have a team of three of us who play regularly, and we hit platinum. I think I was talking to Soccer, I'm not sure how to say their name, in the Rocket League channel in the Discord. They're better than I am, but I hit platinum, and that's, I think for me, it's kind of like, you know, I've arrived, I'm a serious contender in this game. So I hit that in 3v3 mode, and then a couple of weeks later in 2v2. It's one of those games, like, you know, when you see a clip of a game online and you're like, man, I should get back into Rocket League. I love playing Rocket League. So just does that for me. I also recently finished Titanfall 2 with on the hard mode, got all the achievements. I went in, I don't know if you guys are familiar with the Becomes the Master achievement for running the gauntlet in under 33.6 seconds or whatever it is.
I've been so close so many times.
Man, that is tough. Like, I got it. I managed to get it. It took me about an hour and a half straight. I had a quick look online at a tutorial video for a good line, and then practice it. And then once you reckon you've got all the different pieces down pat, you have to do it, you know, all in one go. But 33.4, I got. Popped the achievement. That is really tough. But, yeah, you know, I had a sick day that day from work, and I'm like, oh, what am I going to punish myself with? That becomes the master achievement. And the last thing, so while we were up camping, we did this, it was like a mini amazing race, like the TV show, around the country town that we went to. We went around through all these different pit stops, I guess you would call them. One of them was this place called Arcadion, which is, as the name probably sounds, it was a video gaming center. So we went there on the first day and we played in the Nintendo corner for a couple of hours. And when you were saying the 32-bit era graphics don't look good today, you're right. We played Mario Kart 64.
Yeah, it's blurry.
Doesn't look great. No. Man, it doesn't look great. But we also played Zombies on the Super Nintendo, which I'd never heard of. Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
I love that game. Yeah. I sideloaded that on my SNES Mini. Oh, man, I had to. That game rules.
That is a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Holds up better. It still holds up. You're totally right.
Yeah, the art design holds up on those old games.
But in terms of the Amazing Race pit stop, we got to the door, we were the second team there, and the first team picks the Xbox card. So they had Guitar Hero, and they were struggling through Guitar Hero, and I tried not to laugh at them, because, you know, it's not their fault, they haven't played it. But we got Beat Saber on the PSVR as the second team, and man, that game, I'm not a big fan of VR. I'm not really sure where its success is going to come from, but that game, Beat Saber, is a lot of fun. You're holding the remotes and you're slicing the boxes that come towards you. It's, yeah, man, that's a lot of fun, that game. But yeah, that's really all I've played in the past couple of weeks. Optimus, looks like you're next on the list.
Yeah, well, we got the Borderlands 1 remaster, and I've been playing that a lot. And occasionally hopped in pre-sequel with Anthem and Goo. They started a game of that. I jumped in some Borderlands 2 with Anthem and Goo because they were farming a boss. And then I've been trying to jump into some Blackout when I see Fen and McSwitch and the guys online. That's pretty much all I've been playing the past 2 weeks.
I think we're all shocked that you mentioned Borderlands, by the way.
Right, sure, I'm sure. Yeah. What about you, Fen?
I mean, outside my usual suspects. There we go. I can't even say suspects correct. I've lost it tonight, guys. I've played a couple games. I started the Battlefront 2 single player and been working my way through that, and I'm really enjoying it.
Super late to the party, bro.
I know. I know. I picked it up on sale when you said, "Hey, go pick it up on sale."
Yeah,
for
yeah,
like
yeah. The
multiplayer
is pretty fun when
yeah, but
getting steamrolled.
The single player has been a lot of fun. I mean, it's got a lot of the Star Wars tropes that I'm used to in a lot of games, but I've been enjoying the story so far. I think about midway through it. And then I also downloaded off of Game Pass the Operencia game. Code White was talking about it in the Xbox General channel. It's a first-person turn-based fighting strategy game. It's interesting because you gain characters in your party, but you don't see your own characters. You only see the enemies. And they have three sets of lines. They have a green line, which is right in front of you, a yellow line, which is like your mid range, and a blue line, which is your long range, and your attacks do various damage or accuracy ratings based on those lines. So it's definitely unique. It's got a kind of wonky, like a very blunt story. It's just, we're going to go do this now, and now we did this, and let's go do that next, and let's go kill the dragon. Okay. Let's go kill a dragon. But I don't think I'll finish it, and I'm sure that's like nails on a chalkboard for you, Pluto. I got like 4 achievements in it, and I'm just going to drop this game and move on. So, but
there are some games that I've done that. Ninja Gaiden 2 is one that comes to mind.
The Xbox version, that game is hard.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Hard.
But
I think I spent about $15 recently rebuying it with the stupid thoughts that I'll go back to it soon and replay it.
Nope.
Good luck,
no,
sir.
I don't think so. Yeah.
It just got added to backward compatibility and digital catalog today, I think.
Yes, it did.
Or yesterday. So.
So that's it for me, other than the usual things I play. So, and I don't need to tell you guys all about that anymore. You've heard it enough.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I played some of my usual suspects. I've been going through a tour of some of the fighting games. I did roll credits on Dead or Alive 6 Hop, so, you know, whenever you want to play, let me know.
I said good day.
I did try a couple games that have come out recently just sort of for fun to see if they would be interesting. I tried Dangerous Driving, which was sort of the spiritual successor to Burnout, some of the more classic Burnout games,
yeah,
as opposed to the Paradise.
Yeah, it's some of the original team that made Burnout 1, 2, and 3. I watched that Digital Foundry review, and it looks interesting, but not interesting enough for me to buy.
Yeah, I'm not impressed. The driving doesn't feel good. It feels just basically like if you were playing almost on PC, where, you know, the WASD, you hit A and you just start going hard to the left or hard to the right. It doesn't feel real subtle in the controls. And the takedown, you know, where you crash into people and knock them out and stuff, seems a little janky. At the end of the day, it didn't do a lot for me. I'm kind of disappointed. I was really hoping for that to be a little more exciting. But I also tried the tutorial of Outward. My boss was raving about how good this was. He's playing on PC. And it's a kind of throwback RPG, third-person, over-the-shoulder perspective. Inventory management is a big factor. You've got, a bunch of different weapons and a bunch of different abilities and spells. Just getting through the tutorial felt like a slog, so I'm not sure how much I'm going to be in for the actual game, but I will give that a shot at some point. So I'll report back if I have any exciting new findings on that guy. Let's move on to our community updates. Hop, what's going on Mondays?
Mondays is Xbox Game Night, where we vote on a game in the Xbox Game Night channel and get together and either try something new or try something we all like to play. This past week we tried Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare 2. That was okay. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I mean, it's not a bad game, but maybe just not my thing. And we didn't have a lot of turnout. And also, you could only do four players, right? We couldn't even do like 4v4 friends. It was literally just four players.
Yeah, it was definitely disappointing that way.
I think that's probably what mostly made it not that great for me, is that we couldn't get like a full room of tag people playing against each other. It was either four of us against the computer, like a horde mode, or four of us versus another team. So, maybe next week, if you have any suggestions, hit us up on our Discord, Xbox Game Night. Usually a game that's on Game Pass or has been recently games with gold or is like a standby classic are all good choices for the game night. What about...
Yeah, we want to get as many people in there right. that have the game as possible.
So. Fenn, do I even need to talk about Thursday, or are you going to take this one for me?
I mean, if you don't know what Thursday night is by now, come on. It's Halo night. Yeah, it's good times. Come join us on Thursday. We play Halo. We shoot each other. We teabag each other. We sing songs about teabagging each other. It's a good time.
That's a pretty good summary. We also have a book club on the Discord. We pick a new book every month. I will say that we have had some great titles lately. We had The Right Stuff recently, super great classic. We have a new book this month, which is a fantasy novel. Come check it out in book club on Discord. We also normally have a Gems of War update, but our good friend Calvin has been super backed up at work, so he promised us a big meaty update for the next podcast. And then finally, Fenn, I know you're not a PC guy, but could you talk a little bit about our last community update?
Yeah, we got a small group of taggers that started up a PC tabletop simulator night on Wednesdays, and they get together and they play different board games, different card games with each other, and they join the Discord Blatherbox channel and chat with each other through it, and it seems like they have a good time, and they always come out with some kind of shenanigans after they've played Cards Against Humanity. So if you got a PC, grab PC Tabletop Simulator and join in the fun there.
Alrighty. Real quick before we get into our deep dive, I just want to remind you, hey, TAG is all community supported. One of the ways that we pay our bills for things like this wonderful podcast and our website is through our Amazon affiliate links. You will see the affiliate bot post or repost Amazon links, and that basically just adds our affiliate tag. You can also find the link on the bottom of our website, theadultgamer.com. And if you click on the Amazon CA or Amazon US link at the bottom and then buy something, TAG gets a little cut. Amazon gives us a little kickback for referring you. And it's a great way for us to make some money. And guess what? Your price does not change. It doesn't cost you a dime. So please, if you could use that to help support TAG, we would sure appreciate it. All right, Fenrir, what is our deep dive this week?
Yeah, this deep dive... was a question that Pluto actually proposed to us when we were getting ready for the show, and he talked about the state of games when they release. This has been a big concern with a few games recently. Most notably, Anthem was a huge one the year before, or a couple years ago, with another BioWare product, Mass Effect, Andromeda, Fallout 3, Fallout 4. Feel like I'm
Fallout
missing
76.
I mean,
so what I'm hearing is the problem is companies that start with the letter B. If we just got rid of all those, we'd be fine.
BioWare and Bethesda, I get it now.
Yes.
No, our games broken, or too many games coming out broken when they launch? And should we give developers a pass regarding it? Or should we vote with our money and not buy games at launch anymore and make them, you know, fix them before they come out? So I would like to say there are great arguments for this based on some of the titles I've already mentioned, but I think that there is also companies that are coming out with games that aren't necessarily broken. They're just empty, or they're coming out with games that are solid, like The Division 2. I think The Division 2 has been a very solid game from the start in terms of gameplay and mechanics, as well as story and content. So what do you guys think?
So I have some pretty strong opinions about this, I guess. You know, the day one patch concept started because the video game industry would press discs, and that takes a long time to get those discs manufactured and shipped out to the store. So the game team would have a month, sometimes as long as 6 weeks after the game was done, the version on the disc was being pressed, before they actually were going to have the game in the store. And so they would work on these big patches kind of after release to, you know, they basically made sure the game could work out on the disc, and then they actually made the game they wanted to make and added all the polish at the end. In the age of primarily digital distribution, though, that has gotten weird is the way I would say it, because we see so many of these games, like you were saying, that come out broken. And it's really hard to quantify when a game has crossed the line from being, you know, like a reasonable day one update to really, really unforgivable. And I'm interested to hear where you guys think that line is, because I kind of go back and forth on it, I guess. Fenn, I mean, how do you describe that?
I mean, when I look at some of these games that have released in the last, I don't know, 5 years, that, like Pluto said, when, you know, he knocked on wood, I've been lucky as well with not having to deal with a ton of glitches and things that really make a game unplayable for me in terms of, you know, some of the big hitters like Fallout or Skyrim. You know, I think that it's becoming an impossible feat now, especially with a lot of games being so massive in terms of scope and their worlds, that it's impossible to, I think, plan for every possible thing that could happen inside that every single area of your game and not have it have something glitchy or buggy happen randomly. I mean, Red Dead Redemption 2 is a fantastically polished game, and I didn't have many bugs or anything with it. But I remember I was just walking along a rock one day, and all of a sudden I fell through the whole map. And every game, I think, is going to have these massive bugs. I mean, I just think people don't need to get their...
Well, but is there a difference between a game coming out with one or two bugs like you're describing, and maybe they're really annoying for the people who hit them, but maybe that's, you know, that could be a single-digit percentage of players, versus something like you know,
Anthem.
I'll pick on Mass Effect and Andromeda, just because that's one I know really well. the facial animation system was clearly broken.
Dude, it was a train
out of
wreck.
The box.
It was hideous.
Well, and there's no way they didn't know that that was this, right? They shipped the game anyway.
Yep.
I mean, there was... That was terrible. I mean, but outside of that piece, to me, I really had no issues with Mass Effect Andromeda, you know, other than there was a couple weird cutscene issues where my character at one point looked like he was on the cross dying. It was... Yeah. Rather strange.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's just stuff like that. I mean, that doesn't ruin a game, but like when I look at a game like Anthem, to me, I really love the gameplay of Anthem. I enjoyed flying, I enjoyed the combat, but the load screens, the loot drops, and the difficulty to do like very simple things in that game broke it for me. Like the quality of life things inside that game were so through the roof of difficulty to either access, or you had to wait forever to do simple things. It just pissed me off, and I stopped playing the game because I was tired of waiting. I could watch a Netflix episode of any show I want to watch before I would do three missions in Anthem. So, you know, that to me is where a game gets broken. Not necessarily the bugs or the visual animations of things.
I think for me, I guess being massively focused on achievements, I come at it from another perspective as well, is that there is rarely, I don't want to say rarely, I don't want to overstate it, but it's pretty common when a game comes out and achievements do not work. They cannot be unlocked through what it tells you they should do. And it's even games that are made by, I guess, second party studios, you know, from Microsoft, going like, I don't know that they invented the system, but it's like you championed one of the best, in my opinion, the best achievement system that's available, and you're having your second party studios put out games where the achievements don't work. And like I said, I know to a lot of people, they probably like, oh yeah, whatever achievements, I don't care. But being in the communities that I hang around, there's a lot of people that do care about it. So I mean,
fair enough, you're working for something. And if it doesn't get what you want, then I can understand your point. That makes sense.
There have been a few games I know where they've, I don't know if it's 100% where they, but there's been a few where they've patched them and you get the achievements later. You know, and it recognizes that you actually completed said thing. But I know there are a few where they've patched him and they're like, well, too bad, you got to do it again. You're like, what the hell? So, yeah, that I could see how that would be frustrating.
I think for the most part, I'd say more than 50% of the time, if an achievement's broken, it will more than 50% of the time, it will get fixed to some degree. So it's a minor inconvenience. But could you imagine if you got to the end of the game like Ninja Gaiden 2, achievement didn't unlock when you finish that playthrough on Master Ninja or whatever the hardest one is, you
throw the console out the window.
Oh, 100%. And so that's just one thing that I think of when I think about games that are broken. But in terms of the games themselves, I think it has a lot to do with the size and scope of a game. So obviously we mentioned a lot of the Bethesda games, but you can put Skyrim in there, you can put Oblivion, all those kind of games. They're the games that are going to have the most glitches. But I also feel like maybe this is me coming at it from not... I don't think I have as much knowledge on this topic as the three of you would, but we live in a time now where you can get more information than ever. You can watch people streaming betas. You can see people posting about it on Facebook, on Twitter, on everywhere. There's so much information about these games. And you see the things that people talk about go unfixed sometimes for months at a time. And it's just like, it really pisses me off, quite frankly, that the games come out half-baked, I think is, for some games, is a pretty fair statement. And especially when you do see examples of games where you know, it is possible for a game to come out that is large in scope and it works. You know, for me, that was the Doom game. I think that was 2017, 2016 when that came out. I had no issues whatsoever, and I bought that day one, and I played the absolute crap out of it. But I cannot pick a game since then that I've bought and played recently after release that, you know, hasn't had some sort of issues.
Well, and is that the fact that, like, Doom can come out and actually hit that mark, hit that kind of flawless bar, you know, makes me wonder, is it just that the game developers are cutting those corners, or is it that Doom technically was doing something different than most games? Like, I'm curious what the underlying cause is there, I guess.
Well, I think when you have a linear focused game that has specific level designs, it helps you.
I was going to say the same thing. That would make it easier. That game had, you know, it's not even anywhere near the depth of something like Skyrim. There's the levels are set on one layout. There's not multiple characters to talk to. There's nothing, you know, like that. There's less variables. I think the problem with the Bethesda games in general is the worlds are so big. Their engine is made in-house, and it's kind of bloated beyond its own size that I bet tracking bugs in that is a freaking nightmare. And that's why, most people know if you buy a Bethesda game at launch, you're getting a lot of bugs. You are a bug tester for like 6 months or more. Yeah. Unfortunately.
And people say that. They say, yeah. Oh, it's a Bethesda game. What did you expect?
And right. That's sad. I think I said that in Melified. It's like, that's crap. I agree. It's crap, but that's part of it. But most of the time on Bethesda games, I wait till the Game of the Year edition comes out, because usually by then it's mostly fixed. I say mostly fixed. There's usually a couple other bugs that creep up, but by then it's usually fixed.
But Bethesda's also the company that will find certain bugs and go, "Yeah, we're gonna leave that one because it's hilarious."
Right? They'll leave exploits too. Same with I know there's a couple quote unquote bugs in Borderlands 2 that the team left in there because they were like, you know what, screw it, that the people are having fun doing this glitch to get something, then we're just going to leave it in there. Not like Bungie, who, Lord, you cannot farm loot ever, or we will fix it in a heartbeat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I dropped a link.
Sorry, Mel.
Oh, no, it's okay. I was going to say, I dropped a link in the chat here, which is a screenshot from one of the older Witcher games.
Oh, man.
And, your horse, Roach, there was a bug where he would sometimes spawn on top of buildings.
That's
and
awesome.
So the screenshot is just of your horse standing on top of a building. And they actually, this was in, I think, Witcher 1 or Witcher 2 that this happened. And they actually made it kind of a running joke in the series, where in Witcher 3 there's a few different references to it. And at one point on one of the quests, you actually find Roach up on top of a building and, you know, Geralt standing there yelling at him to get down.
That just looks so funny, man.
Yeah, so, I mean, there is some fun bugs. I remember the dragons flying backwards in Skyrim was another one that I remember being, you know, people having a lot of fun with. But I think the difference for me, as we've been talking about it, I've been trying to order my thoughts. When it's something that seems really fundamental and could have been caught in testing, there is very little, I have very little sympathy for the game developer not fixing that. I think Bethesda gets away with it, but there is no reason, given their track record, that they shouldn't double their QA staff and hire a bunch of contractors to test the crap out of that game the 3 months before they want to release it and get all that stuff fixed, or at least, you know, the vast majority of it.
Mel, you're forgetting beta testing and QAing is now crowdsourced to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, that's that's an unfortunate reality, right?
Yeah. The cynic in me says, why would you pay QA testers when you can have people pay you for the privilege? You know, by buying the game.
You're right.
I think that even, especially, I mean, we're harping on about Bethesda, but I think that if you had, you know, like a Bethesda Insiders Club or something where there's 1,000 people in it and you go, you know what, guys, you're going to be covered by an NDA, but you can play Fallout 5 or whatever the next one is. For that 3 months, we want you to report the game, send us video. They would probably, there would be a good chunk of them that would do it for nothing because they want to play the game. So I'm not even sure how much of a cost there is associated with it.
That's true. And I've worked for a developer, Stardock, who did that quite a bit, where they made it part of their Founders Club, where if you paid basically like $100 for a game that was going to come out for 50 or 60, you would get all the future DLC and you would get the early builds of the game, and they asked you to, you know, submit bugs when you found them. So
yeah.
Not everybody was willing to do that, obviously. That's a big, big premium, but they had enough people to get those testers, you know, out of the diehard fans, I guess.
I think it's fair to say that, you know, we keep mentioning Bethesda, but that's just kind of like they're the punching bag of this joke of games being broken. But I mean, they have produced a lot of games that have been solid from start to finish at launch. I mean, the Dishonored series, both games were really great when they first launched, you know, and I think that goes back to showing that whole piece that Hop and I were talking about. When you have a more singular focused game that's linear, that has set level designs, it makes it, there's probably a degree of difficulty that's lessened by that versus a huge open world that has multiple things happening and different, you know, NPC, different NPCs and people running around. So, I mean, like you said, Mel, if the game is doing something that makes it harder for me to engage with that game, then that is where I find the brokenness. Like a bug or a crash or something like that, that might be an inconvenience for a time being, but that's not broken in my opinion, as long as I can get back into it and get playing right away. But when it's something that is keeping me from playing from the time I sit down on my couch, turn my Xbox on, and the hour that I have to play video games, if I can't play for the majority of that hour, then because I'm dealing with load screens and loot systems and things that just aren't intuitive or easy to use, then yeah, that's broken to me because that takes all my time away.
Yeah, and see, like, I think of that as just bad game design rather than the game being broken. But because we are now in an age where the game developers, you know, I praised Ubisoft earlier tonight up for continuing to work on Starlink, and BioWare will continue to work on Anthem and try to improve a bunch of those systems that for you are really broken, and maybe they can improve the load times and some of the other issues as well. I think Fallout 76 is an interesting example of this as well, where the game came out with no content, or Sea of Thieves, if we want to not pick on Bethesda all night. You know, Sea of Thieves came out, and I was like, oh my gosh, there's nothing to do in this game. And I sat down with a notepad, and in 5 minutes had written down 10 or more gameplay ideas where I'm like, oh, you could have done a little side quest like this. You could have done this as a little mode. You could have had this in the game. And, like, brainstormed triple the content from what they launched with. And yet, you know, none of that was there. They've started adding a lot of that to the game over the last year, and they're about to release a really big update. But that's a year after release, guys. Like, holy cow, if I had paid $60 for that game, oh wait, I did, I'd be kind of over it. Like, screw you guys, what the hell, why does it take a year to do some of these updates?
And that's also considering how long it was already in the oven, because that
game
was announced a long time before it came out. So what did you do in that time? I guess
perfected the water.
Yeah, well,
the water is. Look, don't underestimate.
Yeah,
I would just run around and get my pirate drunk and barf on people, and then after 20 minutes, I was like, "Well, let's go play something else."
But at least now, I mean, to their credit, they have supported the game well, and I think at one point, it might have been in February, the game was actually the most streamed game either on Mix or Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
So it took Fortnite. Fortnite's crown there. So, yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of games that come out empty and then they get populated with things to do afterwards, but
is that a new norm? It's a new norm. A year later, life's better.
It's a service. That's
what I think State of Decay 2 is another example of that, right? Where the game was definitely rough around the edges when it came out, and they've done a lot with it. But is that enough to get people to go back to it after a year?
And that's the thing. Like, these games get reviewed as they come out. And then a year later, or 2 years later, or however many years down the track we are for Sea of Thieves, the game is nothing like when it came out. And from everything I hear about it, it's a lot of fun and there's a lot of things to do. But there's no, you know, second takes on that game. Mm-hmm. Like, you live and die by the review that comes out in the first 3 months.
I think part of what's going on there, though, is reviews are less and less significant to game sales.
Oh, yeah.
Gamers don't read reviews, by and large.
I have a look at it, you know, to see what people are saying about them. But at the end of the day, I will make my own decision on whether to buy the game. There's not a reviewer that says, yes, buy this game, and I'll nod my head dumbly and fork out my credit card.
You clearly have not had a lot of conversations with Optimus.
What?
One other thing that I thought of in terms of glitchiness and game-breaking things, there are a lot of games that come out where you can lose your save game progress as well.
I haven't seen that in a long time, but yeah. What have you had happen recently with that?
A friend of mine was playing... actually, Chin Doctor, my co-host on the podcast, he was playing... Enter the Gungeon, which was an indie game. It is an indie game. And he swapped over to do his dailies in Lies of Astaroth, came back and his save was wiped. And I remember listening to him talk about that. And I remember reading it for countless games over the past few years. It's like, I'm not going to pretend like I'm a game developer, but I would think that one of the most robust things you need in your game is that... a save file. And there are games which I remember looking through the files on my Xbox 360, you'd have your save game and then something would be called save game dash backup. Because I don't know if they knew it was a possibility that it could corrupt, but I might be making a mountain out of a molehill, but Chin spent about 50 hours.
Hop, you had that happen to you recently with Crackdown.
Oh yeah, that's right. That is right. They had they fixed that in the first big patch, but there was a glitch on Crackdown 3 on the Xbox One. If you were playing your own game and then you went to do co-op with somebody, it would overwrite. There was like a 90% chance it would overwrite your game with wherever they were at in their game, or it would just overwrite to a new world and you'd lose all your progress. Yeah, I lost a ton of progress. It's a good thing the game was fun, because I didn't mind doing it again, and I suckered some people into helping me.
And luckily, it was only story progress. It wasn't your character's progress.
Yeah, exactly. It was interesting how they did that, which was kind of good.
I think the one I remember running into wasn't losing the save, but having a save with no prior saves available. I just had the one, and the game was glitched in such a way I couldn't continue. It was Mafia 2, and there was, like, I had done something in a weird order, and it locked the next story quest, and I couldn't trigger it to start. And so I just I quit the game because I couldn't ever beat it, and I refused to play the whole game over again. It does happen from time to time, but like you said, Pluto, it kind of tends to be, I think, one of the things the game developers try really hard to prevent.
They'll fix it first as well if it is a problem too. So that's to their...
Yeah, Nintendo actually had a really bad example of this back on the Wii. You had to pop your SD card out and mail it to Nintendo, and they would go in and edit your save to fix a progress issue with Metroid Prime, where if you... didn't collect a power-up and went back through a door, the door would be locked forever and you couldn't continue the game. And because the Wii had no capacity for online updates, the only solution... they couldn't patch the game, so the only solution was to fix the save.
Man, that's...
Yeah.
That's nuts.
That's why I remember it, because it was so crazy to think, like, you had to mail your SD card off and hope, you know, wait for Nintendo to go in and edit your save file. Like, that's just crazy.
Did they send you, like, a Nintendo Store gift card or anything for the inconvenience?
I don't know, because I didn't do it, but I would hope so. I don't know what the specifics were.
Yeah. And I guess the last example I can think of that just sticks in my mind is almost anything Battlefield releasing. Battlefield 4, oh, 4 was with their really bad netcode issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Battlefield 1 had some bad glitches too.
Yeah. And Battlefield 5, I mean, has been pretty glitchy on release. It's, I don't know how they keep doing it. That's just where I'm at with, I don't know. At least they delayed Firestorm until that was done. It seems that one's reasonably robust for the things I hear about it. I actually just bought it last week for $29, so I can move it on the whiteboard when I finish Deus Ex Mankind Divided. But yeah, it's...
So that's in Australian, $29, so that's like it'd be like $1.30 American. Is that, do I have that right?
Dang. It's, yeah, $29. Our games come out at $100, the AAA games.
Whoa.
Wow.
So.
Well, hey, Pluto, thanks for bringing that question to us. I mean, it's definitely an issue that hopefully gets resolved in the future. So thanks for bringing that up for us.
No worries.
All right. Well, thanks, guys. This has been a wonderful podcast. I think we could probably talk for another hour about this topic and still have not said everything, but it's always fun to have a really good deep dive. So thank you for bringing that up, Professor. I am Mellified. You can find me on our Discord. You can find me on Xbox Live. You can find me at Mellified.com, where I have all my gamer tag related things. Fen, where can the folks at home find you, sir?
Fenrir765 on Xbox Live or on the Discord. And don't forget to hit me up with those DMs about the question, the community question of the week. All right.
Woo.
Professor, how about you? Why don't you tell the folks at home about yourself before we go?
Well, you can find me on Xbox. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Mixer and TrueAchievements.com. The gamer tag is all the same everywhere. It's Professor Pluto, no spaces. You can find the Real Gamerscore podcast at RealGamerscore.com.
Fantastic. Well, and of course, once you listen to this show, you're, I think, legally obligated to check out the Real Gamerscore podcast. So, just to be clear. Hop, man, take us out of here.
All right, guys. Come find us. Find all of us on theadultgamer.com. You'll find me there as Hoptimus on Xbox Live as Hoptimus Maximus with a 1. Hit me up if you want to do any Borderlands or Halo. I'm always down for that blackout. And I might be persuaded into jumping back into some Division 2. I just needed a little break. Anyway, everybody, have a good night.
Good night, folks. Thank you.
See you later.